You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Friday, 25 April, Tokyo inflation year-on-year came in 3.5% versus 2.9% previously. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Corinne Whitten from Anchor. Two stocks, Netflix, as it kind of grows up, and then Aspen, as well, it kind of collapses down. John Alford from Old Mutual Investment Group. The local market has been mercy of global events, but also our GNU. And thoughts for me, stop loss for traders, either price, time, or event based. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb: West Coast gas fields can industrialize South Africa, needs more prominence in the plan to secure the country's gas supply, say industrial users. Business Day: portfolio restructuring to cost Anglo up to $1 billion, $300 million in restructuring costs, and $700 million for sale of steelmaking, coal, and PGM units. Morning markets, US was green, S&P up 2%, NASDAQ up 2.8%. The 10-year tipped a little lower, 4.3%. Over in the east is green, although Sydney is closed for Anzac Day. Tokyo is up 1.4%, as is Hong Kong. Tencent up 3.1%. Commodities are green. Gold futures, 3,363. Brent, 66.87. Platinum actually flat, 975. Palladium, 950. The rand is 18.83. Bitcoin, 93,200. Top 40 opening call expected, 390 points to the upside. That is almost 0.5% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Corinne Whitten from Anchor. Corinne, appreciate the early morning time. Let's touch on Netflix first. They've stopped giving details around subscriber numbers. They claim that this is as they sort of mature into a more mature business and focus on revenue and the like. I was skeptical about the subscriber numbers, but man, those results were frankly strong, and lots of good numbers left, right, and center from the company.
Yeah, Simon. So obviously, like you said, the first quarter, they've stopped reporting subscriber numbers. I think this is going to be likened to when Apple stopped reporting the number of iPhones sold, because they want the market to really stop fixating on subscriber growth. And like you said, a clear indication of a maturing company. But these were blowout results, especially on margins and earnings. And margin expansion really has been incredible over the past few years. And it's clear that Netflix is light years ahead of its streaming competitors. What I actually like about Netflix is that it's a very clean story. If you compare it to Disney Plus, the growth there is partially offset by the linear TV division slowly falling away. And also with Netflix, it has limited tariff risk, is the one big pro, and it's also seems to be very resilient to a broader economic slowdown. It's become a staple in households. So it's been seen as a sort of defensive place to hide in the U.S. tech sector at the moment, and it's one of the only big tech stocks well in the green. But the main risk is now valuation, and Netflix's current success has definitely been priced in. The last 3 years, it's up almost 500%, and this is probably the main reason we would not be allocating new money to it.
Yeah, I mean, the first thing I did as you start chatting is I pull up that chart, and it is a wild chart. I take your point. I mean, there is good growth prospect here, but you really are paying up for it. And I suppose we either wait for maybe prices a little lower or that growth to come through to really bring the valuation into line.
Yeah, Simon. So an interesting thing that our analysts do is they actually backtest the implied growth rate based on the current valuation. Yeah. And Netflix's current valuation is implying a free cash flow growth rate of 22% per annum for the next 10 years, which is one of the more expensive ones in the tech sector. If you look at the Mag 7 sort of stocks, it's up there with almost with Tesla in this sort of metric. So, I mean, Netflix is a winner, certainly, and we like it. But like I said, I think you got to be valuation cognizant at this point, because money just has been flowing out of the other tech stocks into this one, I would say.
Yeah, and that's a startling number. 22% is giant. Let's come home to local. Let's come home to what frankly was a scary sense announcement at what, 5 o'clock on Tuesday. Then an announcement, a webcast with management on 8 a.m. Wednesday. This, of course, is Aspen. The stock then dived literally, some 30-odd percent on the day. Bit of a recovery there. What's your guys' take on Aspen?
Yeah, Simon. So, I mean, this can essentially almost be seen as a 2.77 billion rand mistake or write down. It's after, obviously, one of their key mRNA vaccine manufacturing contracts were cancelled. And this Aspen investment case has largely hinged on its ability to fill its sterile full capacity. And they've been significantly underutilizing this manufacturing capacity for a number of years. And investors have been waiting for them to, you know, announce new contracts. But this, obviously, news is the opposite. And Aspen's utilization of this manufacturing capacity is now going to drop even further. And the company expects EBITDA from its manufacturing division to decline by 50% this year. CEO Stephen Saad saying that there is a clear indication that countries are looking to start reshoring health supply chains, which is not good for the pharma industry. And this could be a sign of things to come maybe for other companies. And despite a small rebound in the share yesterday, I think this will be an overhang for quite a while for Aspen. And again, we would not be investing new money into this one. A concern over debt levels is front and center for us. And you never know with these things. I think it might take time for the full set of facts to surface. Aspen will probably replace this lost business, but I think that'll take quite a number of years.
Yeah.
And this setback is going to dent investor confidence. And I think, Simon, the important lesson here is that, as you've said, this was a shock. It was a big knock for one of JC's blue chips. And left field events like this highlight the importance of diversification in your portfolio.
Yeah, no, 100% on that. And I take your point here. I mean, I've seen it. Some folks are saying 18 months, 2 years to sort of refill that capacity they've lost. Is there a challenge here around management in terms of they've been promising for the last couple of years around increasing capacity in those sterile facilities, both down in Klaberge as well as up in France. And it's kind of gone the other way, to be perfectly frank.
So, Simon, I think things in business often are about timing and luck to a large extent.
Yeah.
And I think this worked, unfortunately, against Aspen when they didn't invest significantly into their manufacturing capacity during COVID.
Mm-hmm.
And then COVID kind of fell away. COVID was in the rearview mirror before we knew it, and there was not much demand for those vaccines. So I think they were caught on the they got the short end of the stick there. But like you say, I think investors are starting to – well, not starting. They haven't had confidence in management, I think, for a number of years. Their ability to execute. There's always been an issue with Aspen's deal making. And I think that part of our view is that they really need to start tightening their belt straps. And yeah, Simon, this is a setback. And with the way the world is sort of heading with policies around supply chains, I think Aspen is not actually in a good place right now. And that is why I think it'll take a while for them to get over this later setback.
Yep, I concur with you 100%. It's not going to happen in a hurry. There was a nice bounce yesterday, make no mistake about it, but I would not be running into that stock at any moment. We'll leave it there. Corinne Whitten from Anchor. Always appreciate the early morning time, and that's our poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Aspen, is the opportunity here? Or as Corinne suggests, is this something you perhaps stay away from? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. Let your money weather the storms with Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in the Stanlib Global Select Fund, a diversified all-weather equity portfolio submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Turning now with John Orford. He is from Old Mutual Investment Group, where he's a portfolio manager. John, appreciate the early morning time. No surprises. Markets, businesses in particular, crave certainty. Right now, between the White House VAT flip-flops, the GNU sort of tensions, we're in a world of uncertainty, and it makes it very difficult for businesses on the ground. Frankly, it makes it difficult for investors at the same time. Is the focus for you and your colleagues, is it more the local issues, or is it more sort of global issues that are sort of top of mind, or is it a blend of both?
Yeah, morning, Simon. Yeah, absolutely. If you think about it from a business point of view, or a household doing a sort of spending on maybe refurbishing their house or buying a car, or whatever, you need a decent time horizon on that. As a business, you've got to make a return on the money that you borrow or raise from shareholders to do that investment. So knowing where you're going to be in 5 or 10 years' time is important. And I think you're absolutely right. The uncertainty levels that we're seeing at the moment globally are extreme. It's sort of a 4-standard deviation event on US uncertainty. And that's certainly taken center stage, but we do ourselves no favors here by the uncertainty that we have. So I think it's both of those factors are impacting us. But yeah, I guess in terms of the big headlines at the moment, it's clearly coming out of White House, but we would be in a better position to navigate that if we had more certainty domestically about where we were going.
And I like your point there. It starts at the household level. It then goes to the business, and then ultimately it's you and I and the listeners as investors. You mentioned bringing it home. I mean, in some sense, credit to the Government of National Unity. We almost a year into it, and it has held, except perhaps it, more than holding, it's been teetering from, I don't know, I don't want to say crisis, from one spat to another. And it kind of needs to, in a sense, mature to start functioning more smoothly and give households, businesses, investors that improved certainty.
Yeah, look, what we hope is that this is a sort of growing pains, and that the two major parties, but all the parties involved, are learning to do this a bit better. But I am a little kind of, it alarms me a bit when you have key members of either the ANC or the DA taking swipes at each other rather than focusing on the bigger picture, which is how do we actually get South Africa growing again? I think that what I'd like to see, and we see it to some extent, but with this court case, while I don't want to get into the merits of it, it's very adversarial. So it may well have been the only thing the DA could do, but it's very adversarial, and it's not what you want from partners in a coalition, or if you have members of the ANC just taking swipes at the DA, and that's not what we need. What we need is the sort of strategic vision that this is what the voters have actually put on the table. They haven't voted any party into power. They've said, "Look, guys, we don't trust any of you to lead the government on its own." The polls since the election suggest that voters are actually happy about having a coalition and happy about having the ANC and the DA together. And I think that's where we need to go. And they need to find a way to come together to negotiate things out. And clearly that's the DA's frustration that the ANC wasn't coming to them and saying, this is what we think, what do you think, where's the middle ground? And I guess the ANC is frustrated with the DA for behaving like an opposition in the GNU. So both of them need to actually just sit down and work things out. And it takes a little bit of humility on either side to step back. I mean, we've all been in those kind of negotiations, whether it's personal, business, whatever. You actually need to stop defending your own position and listen to the other guy and say, okay, well, what can we do together? And the GNU certainly has the promise for that. And I hope out of this sort of VAT debacle that we do get a proper mechanism within the GNU to resolve issues. Because while we've had that, I don't know what they call it, steering committee or whatever, chaired by Paul Mashatile, it clearly hasn't done its job.
And I take your point around, I mean, there is, and I think, I mean, part of the challenge is the spats keep on falling into public. They should be happening in the back rooms. We appreciate they exist, but they shouldn't be in. But you did say there's some promise. I mean, there is almost cautious optimism. And I say that because we are almost a year in. There is, it's our first sort of coalition government since democracy in 94. it has held. It hasn't been smooth sailing, but the fact that it's held maybe does give us some cautious optimism. And I take your point around maybe the VAT debacle has kind of clarified sort of how the processes better, how the processes need to work.
Yeah, one hopes so. You know, I mean, obviously it may end up with both parties being very disgruntled with each other, not being able to work together. But one hopes that there clearly are core parts of both parties that wanted to work. Mm-hmm. And then there are clearly people in both sides who may be less keen for it to work. So, you know, that's obviously something that needs to be navigated. But, you know, we've had a major fallout and it hasn't so far ended up in the GNU breaking up. Neither the ANC nor the DA have wanted to do that. So I think that both of them actually have a vested interest in making it work. The ANC obviously, you know, have done catastrophically in the polls. So, mm-hmm. you know, there's nothing to suggest that that will turn around unless they can get the economy growing better and improve the job situation. The DA, you know, had a bit of a ceiling, and this has now given them a voice in government and, you know, gives them the scope to be part of government, not just the opposition, and perhaps to grow their support out of their traditional base. And, I suppose with the stand that they've taken on VAT, maybe that will happen. So I think both of them need it to work, and the country certainly needs it to work because the alternatives of a sort of fragile ANC minority government or an ANC EFF coalition for, let alone the markets, but for ordinary people in South Africa are not, it's not a place we want to go. We've seen where that ends up in other countries and, you know, sort of populist impoverishment of people would not be good. What people need is for government to play the role of fixing the things that it does and allowing the private sector to do the things that it can't do.
Yeah, in the sense, government sort of is an enabler and should step out of the way and let give us the environment and we will manage the rest. We'll leave it there. John Alford, Old Mutual Investment Group Portfolio Manager. Appreciate the early morning. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Market volatility this year has been, well, elevated, I suppose we could call it politely. So some thoughts from me on stop loss for traders as distinct from long-term investors. Traders always need a clear plan in case things go wrong, and that clear plan is a stop loss. If you're using derivatives, the cost structure means time is against you because, of course, you're essentially borrowing money, which means you're paying interest, which means every day costs you money. So price becomes critical. Know at what price do you get out and adjust accordingly. And by adjust accordingly, I mean move that stop loss in your favor when the trade goes in your favor. But when it does reverse, if it reverses, and it hits that price level that you've determined is exit, you absolutely need to get out every single time. Also consider a time-based exit plan. And I say this because, again, this is costing you every single day you hold the position. You expected something to happen, a share to go higher, a commodity, an index. It's going sideways. That grinding sideways is costing you money every day. So take the view that, you know, you're expecting this to play out in, I don't know, 2 weeks, 2 months, whatever it might be. If it hasn't happened in that or maybe a little bit longer, well, then you were also wrong and it's time to go and find another. If you're not using derivatives, you still need an exit plan, but you do have a little more flexibility as there's no direct cost of that position. But of course, there's opportunity cost. We can only have so many positions. Our portfolio is only so big. So say you can have, I don't know, five positions. If one of them or two of them are going nowhere, would that money not be better elsewhere? So again, even if not derivatives, you need a price plan to get out and you need a plan to get out within time. And I would also say event-based. If you're holding a position on, I don't know, expanding margins and those margins are contracting, you need to reduce or exit. But it's always a case of if you're trading, you need exit plans and you need to be disciplined about them. That's it for today. I was chatting with Skalk Lowe yesterday, PSG Old Oak, talking about excellent Capitec results. We asked you if you hold Capitec. 40% said no, seriously expensive. A third said yes, you were loving it. The rest was split between there are better banks or you have taken profits. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again Tuesday. Weaker rand impacting replacement value of insurance.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.